gay people love puns.
I'm dead. We have to stop this podcast.
Well, this book causes Satanism.
What is left for us to rant about?
There is nothing straight about Plum Velvet.
You shouldn't have been drinking when I said that.
Monocles are impractical, but hot. I don't for a second believe that she is a straight person.
I mean, I'm definitely here for bisexual Minerva McGonagall.
Let's talk about Harry Potter.
Hello, and welcome to The Gaily Prophet, a humorous yet ruthless podcast where two queer IRL witches read Harry Potter and talk about it. I am America's favorite Griffin dandy, Lark Malachi Gray.
And I am Griffin Dyke extraordinaire, Jesse Blount. And today we are talking about the second part of Chapter 27 of Goblet of Fire, Padfoot Returns, in which we actually get to the part where we see one Sirius Black, because the gang goes to Hogsmeade with provisions for Sirius, who's been living in a cave up in the mountain outside of town. Everyone's favorite horsey bird, Buckbeak, is here too, which is not relevant to the plot, but I just love that he's here, so here you go. Sirius lets the kid know that he's been living rough, pretending to be a friendly stray, reading the news, and eating rats. Harry is understandably anxious about this whole you being near Hogsmeade, but our favorite dog father points out that there is some truly sus shit happening around here that he needs to be around for. And also, only the three of them and Dumbledore know that he's an animagus. So, kind of foolproof. But we're in investigation mode now, as everyone ends up talking about how old Barty Crouch Sr., how he's gone missing, and how he sacked his house elf at the World Cup, and all the fuck you're around that. Sirius is actually interested in how Crouch Sr. acted, and about Hermione's assessment of Crouch Sr.'s treatment of Winky, because, and as Sirius points out, quote, if you want to know what a man is like, take a good look at how he treats his, quote-unquote, inferiors, not his equals. Side note, quotes around inferior is mine because, check yourself, Sirius Black, your blue blood is showing. Anyway, and then Sirius drops the bomb that he knows a little bit about the measure of Crouch Senior's personality because this motherfucker sent Sirius to prison without a trial. Mental record scratch from our heroes, and honestly, from anyone reading that sentence for the first time. And then we get an explanation of what passes as the quote-unquote justice system in times of crisis in the witching world. Crouch Sr. was the head of magical law enforcement, and he was, as we say in the U.S., tough on crime. He had his sights on being the next miniature of magic, and thought all you needed to fight domestic terrorism was with an iron fist and a complete disregard for human rights. And it would have worked had Junior not been caught with known Death Eaters after Voldemort's fall. Nepotism got Crouch Junior a trial, but he still went to prison and died a year later. A-plus parenting there, my dude. Anyway, his wife unfortunately died also, and after all this personal tragedy, Fudge, of all fucking people, ended up as minister, and Crouch Senior ends up working with Himbo Bagman himself. Womp womp. So, the conversation somehow ends up moving on to Snape and Moody, and we learn that Snape was always the weird kid who knew too much about dark magic and ran with a gang of purebloods that ended up being Death Eaters. The gang tries to read more into this, but Sirius does not have time for that, because there's this whole mystery with Bertha Jorkins, too, who we learn from Sirius had an excellent memory for gossip, and bad judgment as to who to tell it to. It's almost like these two things are related somehow. But visiting hours are over, and the gang heads back to the castle with a lot to think about.
Yes, indeed. So we are going to start this newspaper off with today's headlines. Breaking news! Society with access to literal, functional truth potion can't figure out who is guilty and who isn't, but also doesn't care.
Womp. The saddest womp womp. The saddest enter whatever appropriate sound effect there is for that.
Yep. Anyway, we turn to the front page where we talk about everything that doesn't go anywhere else.
Or in this case, everything that's not fucked up.
I have a bit of unfucked up things in my editorials this week. I tried.
Actually, so did I. Mostly. It like skirts around. It skirts around the fucked up shit, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Let's see how it goes.
Yep. Let's just start here. Why is Sirius, who, as far as we can tell from solid textual evidence, has spent the last many months in some sort of tropical paradise canoodling with Remus Lupin, wearing his Azkaban robes again? What's he doing? What? Why?
Maybe it's too cold to wear the like Speedo, you know, that he was wearing in the tropical. You know, it's not really crop top
weather.
Lupin
would never send him back to Scotland without appropriate winter wear.
Unless Lupin doesn't know, or else he would have been like, are you fucking kidding me? Just come stay at my house instead of living in a cave to be 20 feet closer to Harry. What are you doing?
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, no, I think this is like the silliest thing. The idea that he hasn't changed his clothes in months.
It's very ridiculous. There is no explanation for this. All right. So we learned from Sirius that he's been like hanging out as a dog for who knows how long. And I just like wanted to imagine Sirius like as a dog, like stealing a pie from a windowsill and just like, I don't know, being the like lovable scamp of a like stray dog. People are like, oh, he may look like a terrible death omen, but he's really very friendly.
Yeah. Also, maybe stealing some robes off of someone's clothesline. I don't know. Just saying.
I mean, truly.
I actually deeply appreciate this like comedy gold, this like visual gag that you have to be paying attention to notice. That is the fact that for whatever reason, I guess because he just forgot, he transforms back before he drops the newspapers that he has picked up. So he as a human is still holding a newspaper in his mouth when he's transformed. I think that's so funny.
I think this part of the chapter really leans in on he spent a little bit too much time as a dog and is a little bit dog-like in his mannerisms. I have another fun visual image for you.
Okay.
Which is, we also learn the unfortunate fact that he's been eating a lot of rats to supplement his diet, which is something I will not be going into at all.
Okay, great.
But I also want you to envision every time he eats a rat, he's just like mentally like, fuck you, Wormtail.
Yeah, I like that a lot. This has me thinking about how like rats are such a stand-in for like desperation. Because like Buffy, we see Angel is doing very poorly because he's living on rats. Carry on, Baz is like desperate because he's living off of rats. Sirius here, desperate because he's living off of rats. Is there really like nothing else that we can think of to symbolize not doing well? Is it because like rats are so prolific? I mean, how many rats are there in like northern Scotland in a, you know, non-city where there's probably not a lot of trash for them to get into?
I mean, probably still a lot, because I mean, rats are basically anywhere people are at. And since we get a sense, at least through Harry, where he's like, they're going out to the mountains and he's like, there's more, the gardens are getting larger and the like cottages are getting further apart. So there's some kind of like gardening, some sort of level of agriculture. And I mean, that's where rats, when they're not eating trash, they're eating everyone's gardens or like the grain for your horses or your hippogriffs or whatever the fuck any kind of livestock people might potentially be keeping out here.
I think of mice in that situation, though, not rats.
I mean, you still get rats, too.
I don't know. Actually, I've never really thought about where, like, a wild rat lives. I'm like, yeah, field mice. Where do wild rats live? I don't know.
Where there
in
are
barns.
People.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're eating leftover chicken feed. They're eating garbage. I mean, they're
I guess there's a rat antagonist in Charlotte's Web, huh? That's a fully agrarian.
Templeton the rat. Who's very sassy. Anyway, yeah, I mean, clearly maybe not at the same level of, like, the way that, like, rats are in, say, New York, which is that, like, they just take over at night. To the point where it's like, you guys maybe do need some owls and some more hawks, maybe, because there's a really bad rat problem that you can't just throw a cat at.
Just import coyotes from the countryside.
I think they're already actually moving in. I definitely think I read an article about some, like, maybe like a couple of coyotes in, like, Brooklyn, and I'm like, good, move in. Good for them. Like,
I don't know if it's still around. There was a coyote hanging out in our neighborhood for a while. We'd be like, we walk Inigo after dark because he's afraid of everything. And so there were several times that we'd, like, be walking up a block and be like, oh, there's the coyote. We're going to go the other way. Which is like, what are you doing here, buddy? This is a weird place for a coyote to be. But, like,
I think they're testing the waters about, like, can I live in a city? Maybe I can. Because they live basically also where people are at. So, I don't know. I'm like, good. We're destroying their habitat. Move into... If anyone's going to gentrify my neighborhood, it should be some coyotes, to be perfectly honest.
I totally agree. I'm like, I feel fine about this, but I feel like the people who let their cats go outside probably are not so stoked about there being a coyote in our neighborhood.
Which is why you shouldn't let your cats go outside, among a variety of other reasons. All right. Okay. So my thing is a bit of a language thing, which is that Harry brought a bunch of chicken and some bread and like a flask of pumpkin juice. And I know that flask could also just be thermos if you're not trying to say thermos. But I feel like every time I read that, I just think of like a hip flask of like, like a little flask, like you would put booze in, even though I know that's wouldn't make any sense for them to have as 14-year-olds. And also clearly not enough to bring to someone who's been living off of rats and like rainwater for like as a majority of his meals.
Now I'm thinking, I guess what I was imagining you would call a canteen, which is just a bigger flask. But that's what I assumed was like basically a hip flask, just like larger, the kind that you take hiking with you.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they would have gotten that either. That's a great point.
I mean, I had to look it up as flask is, I guess, a, and people in the UK, please correct me, is a, if you like, what we think of as a thermos is called a flask in the UK.
Okay.
And then I'm like, oh, what if like Hermione has like a, I don't know, cute little like flask that she like has her tea in when she goes to the library. And she's like, we can bring Sirius some in this like, it's like, I don't know, blue plaid or like it has ponies on it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I love that. All right. This is going to be my last thing here. Sirius being like, yeah, when you talk about me, use the code name Snuffles, is like, yeah, that's not weird at all for these kids to be walking around being like, poor old Snuffles. He must really like you, Harry. What?
Okay, this is also the same kid who probably was like, oh, we'll just refer to Lupin as being a werewolf as his furry little problem, which is also deeply... Like, isn't Lupin like, everyone thought I had a particularly vicious rabbit? And it's just like, this is the best you guys could come up with.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because they also went around, like, openly calling each other things like Padfoot and Mooney and Prongs, and then we're like, no one knows, and no one did know. So I guess they're just really, like, banking on witch obliviousness, because that is demonstrably a thing. Yeah. So
why are you gonna ask questions? It's like, do I even want to know? Probably not. Actually, you saying that makes me, it's like, and then you're like, James and like Sirius are the popular kids, because that's like some weird shit that like kids who are not popular would do.
I mean, I think a lot of times all you need to be popular is just to be like super confident and have like people that you are close with that other people feel like are untouchable. So you That's can true. Be quote unquote a popular kid and only have three friends, which That's I true. Think was the case with the Marauders. People were just like, oh, they're cool because they're confident and insular
and also rich. Anyway, I mean, I don't know how much that plays into it, but
I mean, two out of four were rich.
Yeah.
I guess we don't know anything about Wormtail's parentage.
Yeah, we know, like, basically nothing about his background.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes.
I just have one more thing, which is that I am... And this happens probably, like, once a book, where, like, Ron says a thing offhandedly, and it's the thing that actually ends up happening. And I don't like that he says it at the same time he's putting Hermione down. Where he's like, whatever, Hermione. Like, I think if there was a dark wizard clever enough, you could totally fool, you know, Dumbledore. And it's like, you motherfucker.
Yeah. I didn't even clock that. I was too busy thinking about the fact that they're, like, talking to someone who could be a dark wizard that was fooling Dumbledore.
Good thing you're on our side, Sirius.
You're definitely not someone lying and pulling the wool over Dumbledore's eyes. You're an actual good bad guy, right?
Oh, Sirius is just a bad boy TM, not a bad guy.
Yeah.
He just has a leather jacket and rides a flying motorcycle. It's not the same as being an actual.
Yeah, he's a bad guy like the Billie Eilish song, not... got nothing to end that sentence with. Anyway, you ready for the next
I am.
Section?
Cool. I sure am.
Welcome to the politics section, where we talk about things that are fucked up. Kick us off.
There are no good cops. There are only bad cops and worse cops. And this is what we get in this chapter when Sirius describes Barty Crouch Sr. as being the worst cop. And somehow also accurately predicting post 9/11 America, even before this because everything. So we have Sirius starts us off with explaining to the kids how it felt to be in a, like, Voldemort is rising, and, like, everyone's afraid and people don't trust each other, and it's like, and then you have Crouch Senior, head of the magical law enforcement, who is like, we'll fight violence with violence, and everyone's like, great. And then it's like, at the cost of your human rights. And it's like, cool. Are we going to be safe? No? Maybe? And it's just like, I'm just gesturing at my face because it's all bad, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there are some, like, extremely astute observations taking place in this chapter about how easy it is for the quote-unquote good guys to become, like, the same as the bad guys. I don't know, I just got kind of stuck on how, like, this feels like another place where JKR should really, like, look at her own text and be like, am I Barty Crouching it right now with my beliefs, you know?
I had that exact feeling when Sirius is like, you really should pay attention to how people treat, I don't like the word inferiors in quote unquotation, and not how they treat their equals. And I'm like, wow, that is a really astute point for someone who could really use that advice. Maybe just reworded to be less fucked up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sort of astute observation about how it's bad when all of a sudden your law enforcement is judge, jury, and executioner all at the same time is, it's real bad. It's a real, it's not great for. Right.
It's very, very dangerous.
Yeah. It's basically like, so you're still a fascist though, because you've allowed people to go to murder prison, like depression prison without a trial, and then also the cops can kill you even before you get there if they deem it. It's like, cool, okay, so who is there any oversight? Oh, there's not? Okay. That doesn't sound like a terrible way that maybe, already marginalized magical people like werewolves or half giants or half Velas could potentially be caught in the crossfire of that. Surely not.
Yep. I don't know, man. Something about, like, I'm trying to remember what this quote is. I can't remember. But, like, being given permission to use an unforgivable curse feels like something that you, like, actually can't do. Like, you can say the words, but, like, those things cancel each other out. Like, if unforgivable is in the name of the curse, you can't be given permission to use it forgivably, you know? I think it's something, I can't remember where I heard this, but something about how, like, you can't promise to do something immoral because, like, a promise is, like, a moral action. Like, you're promising to, like, behave in a way, and you can't, like, make a genuine promise to, like, behave unethically because, like, that cancels out what a promise is meant to do. And that's kind of how it feels. Like, this is a philosophical, like, snafu. Like, you can't be given permission to do something unforgivable that literally doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels deeply American to be like, yeah, cops, go ahead. Yeah, torture people in the field. Do whatever you need. That's fine. In the name of justice.
Yeah, I did a deeply upsetting Wikipedia read about Guantanamo Bay, because this is kind of immediately what it reminded me of, which, for those who don't know, aren't in the know, weren't maybe alive for the inception of this, is just basically a naval prison in Cuba that America created after 9/11 to be like, man, we're going to get some bad dudes and we're going to find out what they're doing, if they're doing terrorism. And, like, immediately threw hundreds of dudes from, like, all over the world into this prison and tortured them. And it turns out that, like, probably none of them were guilty of anything besides, I don't know, being caught up in the fact that the U.S. is like, we'll give you $5,000 American to find some bad dudes for us to put in this prison, which is clearly never just going to get people who are just like, don't know anything, or your neighbors rat you out because they want some. Like, it's like totally not at all a twisted, flawed system that's just going to get randos who are now going to spend years in torture prison because they're like Muslim and the wrong place at the wrong time, you know? Yep. So... yeah. And so, yep. In the Wikipedia article, there was an op-ed from a general who worked at Guantanamo Bay. He was like, who was basically like, yeah, pretty immediately after we built it and we threw like 100 people in there, it was like, oh, we're doing the wrong thing. This isn't, these people don't know anything. And now we're just torturing people who are innocent. Because the American political machine wants some sacrifices for domestic terrorism that, based off historical actions, that America didn't need to be in the first place. So,
yeah.
And,
like, for the record, you shouldn't torture people who are guilty either.
Yeah. Torturing is literally a thing that's like a war crime and, like, a crime against humanity.
Also, it's fully ineffective as an interrogation tactic.
Yeah.
TV has lied to you, everyone.
Yeah. It's like, if you listen to our last episode about how ineffectual truth serum is IRL, it's also a thing that came back post 9/11 to be like, look, we're doing a thing, America. And it's like, cool, truth serum doesn't work. And it's like, you might as well drug people then, I don't know, waterboard them. Both, neither of them are great, but waterboarding sounds fucking god-awful, so...
Yeah, guilty people are never going to confess because of torture, and innocent people will give you false confessions to make torture stop, and those are the only two things that happen as a result of torture. So it's not good.
And so it's actually kind of wild that we're getting this in this children's book, where Sirius is like, myself and probably other innocent people were tortured with impunity, without trial, probably not even like people knowing it. In fact, people being in support of this because of like fear of domestic terrorists who many just seem to be like rich people. It's like so many purebloods are fucking Death Eaters. It's sort of like, and I mean, the only reason that I think even Sirius even gets caught up in that, despite the fact that he's from an old pure blood family, is that he's been excommunicated from his family at this point.
Right.
So, and then because we get where it's like, oh, well, Crouch Sr., like, extended the littlest bit of nepotism to get his son a trial, which is better than Sirius got, even though he ended up going to Azkaban anyway, you know?
I mean, this is a two-part thing. One, I think that in the context of the book, Sirius's assertion that he thinks that Crouch Jr. got a trial just so that his dad could, like, prove how much he wasn't giving his son preferential treatment feels true. And also the part where Barty Crouch Jr. wasn't given leniency because of his dad feels like the least accurate thing, like, that maybe ever happens in the context of, like, this whole witch political system. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that, I don't buy that for a second. But
so, yeah, so Barty Crouch Sr., pretty garbage dude. And then so we have Sirius explaining that public opinion about Junior becoming a Death Eater is that Barty Crouch Sr. wasn't home enough, maybe should have paid more attention to his kid, what maybe wasn't loved enough, whatever, mm-hmm. which could be a factor. But I think in 2022, I think that we also can envision a bored, privileged Barty Crouch Jr. who has a lot of time to be essentially radicalized by the alt-right Death Eaters, mm-hmm. aka see any white mass shooter in the U.S., which is essentially his vibe.
Yeah.
And I mean, we even get the extra eye roll thing that is said about every, like, fucking white mass shooter, which is like, oh, he was a nice young man from a good family. Like, how could this have happened? And it's like, because you're not paying attention to what your children are doing, and it still sort of politically aligns with what you're saying, even if maybe not to the extreme that you think they are, where it's like, you're just letting your kid be wild in on these online streets, being neo-Nazis. It's like, maybe you should... I mean, and obviously, Barty Crouch Jr. had, like, some agency to make these fucked up terrible choices for himself. But there could have been some intervention in there before he ends up joining fucking the Bellatrix Lestrange to torture the shit out of Neville's parents. After Voldemort's already fucking been gone. Like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there is a progression to get to that point.
Right now, I don't know what's going on with my brother. I haven't talked to him in, like, 2 years or more. But, like, I feel like I have, like, watched him becoming radicalized over the past, like, 10 to 15 years and, like, can't count the number of conversations that my mom and I have had with him over the years being like, this is bad. Like, this doesn't feel good. You should not say these things. Let's have a long conversation about, like, what's going on with this. And, like, that train just kept rolling, you know? I think, which is not to say, like, people shouldn't do everything in their power to, like, try to have interventions. But it also kind of feels like trying to stop your boomers from getting radicalized on Facebook sometimes. Like, at some point, they're just going to cut you off. Like, my brother and I don't talk anymore.
Yeah.
Just throwing my hands up in.
Yeah, that is a huge bummer. Because, like, yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. The internet is a really, really dangerous place.
Yeah. And I think there is danger. I feel like the danger it poses to young white men is really understated, I think. And it's sort of like, in a variety of ways. And it's sort of just like... I don't know what the solution to that is.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, this is unfortunately where Barty Crouch Jr. the road that he decided to walk with his life, which is to become a Death Eater.
Yep.
So, which again, I don't necessarily think is all of the fault of Crouch Sr. just never probably being home ever, but if you want your kids to like you, you should be at home sometimes with them. if Crouch Jr. didn't become a Death Eater, he probably would be a person who just didn't talk to their dad. Because it was like, I don't even fucking know you, bro. You know?
Yeah, and I think also, like, if this is how Crouch Sr. is implementing, you know, his how to make society good in public, like his parenting probably looked similarly, you know?
Yeah. And probably his marriage also, considering, just want to throw out, if you Google statistics of how many cops are involved in domestic violence in general, it's a lot. It's a high amount. And there's a little, I mean, there are a lot of theories for why that is, but it's all not good. It's just, it's a giant, like, ball, like, knot of not good, of not goodness is there.
If I'm recalling correctly, whenever we see Junior's trial in the pensive, his mom is there in the courtroom, I think, just, like, crying her eyes out, and Crouch Sr. is just, like, ignoring her and, like, lambasting, is that how you use that word? I don't know. Their son, and, like, just being so, like, aggressive and cruel publicly with, like, no concern for how she's feeling or experiencing the situation. So I think that's a very astute observation.
Yeah. So obviously a villain, but it's also like there are things happening in the background that brings you to torturing two innocent people for no goddamn reason. So
yeah.
And sometimes being a I don't know, being privileged does not mitigate that, and sometimes it exacerbates it. I don't know. So
then he goes to Azkaban.
Then he goes to Azkaban, which we learn. Obviously we've learned a lot about what a terrible garbage nightmare prison this is, but Sirius basically gives us information that it's essentially a death sentence for a lot of people because you're in this, your own personal depression hell that's unending, and people stop eating. People, like, passively, or I guess actively, depending on what you say, just, like, kill themselves. And it's like, wow, what a great place to send all of your prisoners. Like, you're just basically condemning them to death for what, you know? Especially during a time when you aren't getting a fucking trial. You're just shipping people off a fucking nightmare prison.
Yeah. I feel like the thing that really drives the point home here. Sorry, everyone. I didn't take my ADHD medicine today. I'm doing my best.
You're doing great.
Thank you. Is that Crouch and his wife are allowed a deathbed visit when Junior is dying. He's not dying of an illness. He's not dying of something untreatable. He's dying of being in Azkaban. Like, that is his diagnosis. And it's not like he's desperately ill, we should, like, do something. It's like, yep, he's become desperately ill as a direct result of being here. And because he's privileged, his parents can come say goodbye because him dying is the only next step. Like, that's wild to me.
Actually, the way that Sirius said it made me assume that unless you're politically connected, you couldn't even do that much if your family, if you had someone in your family in Azkaban, which is also just like, oh, the layers of privilege that are happening within this terrible, fucked up judicial system is just garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't, I think, yeah, no one who doesn't have strings to pull would get a, I don't know what the word is, but yes, the quote unquote privilege of getting to say goodbye to anyone before dying of, like, sadness.
Yeah, it's just like, and there's, like, no such thing as, like, I mean, you guys, abolish all prisons. All prisons are bad. There isn't, it's like all or nothing. It's like either you are found innocent or you go to fucking this nightmare prison. Like, what was Hagrid sent to prison for in book 2? Like, I mean, I guess being connected to the whole heir of Slytherin, but, like, without a trial, she's just sent to Azkaban for, like, 3 months. And they're just like, we don't totally know, but, and yeah. And it's sort of like, we're not really ever given a sense of, like, Azkaban is only reserved for people who, like, are fascist and are doing unforgivable curses. Like, Could you be sent there if you had just, like, a numerous amount of, like, underage magic, you know, notices? Sort of like...
Yeah, great question.
Yeah. So, yeah, Azkaban is even worse than we've gotten up to previous. And honestly, they should have just... I know it's made of stone. It was like, burn it down. They should have just blew it up. Like, why do you even have this? You have magic. I mean, obviously, I don't think anyone should go to prison because there are way better ways of working within a, you know, justice system that doesn't involve just locking people up in a room.
Right.
Especially a nightmare depression room like an Azkaban. So it's just like...
Yeah. Yeah. Abandon it and turn it into a bird sanctuary. Like,
right.
It's IRL inspiration. Alcatraz.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to Advertisements, where we talk about how you can support this podcast and make you laugh. Before we get into some ads, I would first like to say thank you for a donation that we received in memoriam for Agamemnon and Snoop Dogg, who are much missed and priceless dogs.
Aww.
I know. Jesse's hand is to her heart.
That is very sweet and tender. So.
Yeah, that is like exactly what I did when I got the email being like, you've received a donation. And I like saw the line. I was like, oh. So, yes. What's next? All right. So, okay. Yes. I don't know if everyone knows this, but people decide how seriously to take a podcast based on how many reviews of what type it has on Apple Podcasts. We are at like 345 reviews right now. I have this dream of hitting 400 by the end of the year. Just totally doable. Totally doable. But not if I don't tell people to do it. So, if you haven't left us one yet, please do, because they make us really happy. And to demonstrate that, I'm now going to read a few to Jessie that I don't think she's seen.
Oh, I have not seen any of the newest ones.
Okay. So first up is from Netsrick789. I just started listening and I'm loving engaging with the books I loved in a critical way. Most of all, I love when they crack each other up. Life is stressful. Laughter is helpful.
Aww. That's so true. Right?
Get it tattooed. Yes. This one is from Mix Artemisia, who said, first of all, I love this podcast. Every episode is a queer hug of validation. I'm also writing this to say that I just had the urge to re-listen to your first episode, and wow, Lark's voice is so different now. I barely recognize him in the first episode. As a trans person thinking of going on T, this made me feel really happy and hopeful.
Oh,
do it.
Yeah, do it.
It's going to be great. And finally, we have one from Alan Doucet. I don't know. It says, I, Grace, finally understand what it means to read critically, to engage with the text, something my high school English teachers failed to teach me. But seriously, this podcast is a gem. The HP commentary is so thoughtful and thought-provoking. Jesse's laugh is infectious, particularly when Lark says something hilarious that catches them both off guard.
I love everything about that. Yes, we need more critical thinking. Yay.
The Gaily Prophet, better than your high school English class. That's our new tagline. Anyway.
Yeah, I love it.
Yes, please leave us reviews. And if you want to financially support us, we're on Patreon. We sell cool merch. We take donations. You can follow us on social media. All of that's in the show notes. Now I'm going to read you a funny ad. Everyone ready? Great. If you are trying to help a fugitive stay safe and hidden, but don't want them to suffer, 4 out of 5 witches recommend getting them a new wand. A new wand can help your fugitive turn a dank cave into a cozy cove, spruce up those ratty robes, and best of all, summon a real meal rather than living off rats. So if you're ready to take the next step in fugitive care, head on down to Ollivander's wand shop in Diagon Alley and get them a new wand today. Dumbledore.
I was literally thinking that. I'm like, where the fuck is Sirius going to get a wand? Where is he going to get a wand in the next book? I don't even know.
Dumbledore told him to come stay in this cave. I don't know if you remember that. That's established at some point in this book.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, no. He's like, yeah, Dumbledore's the one who told me about this cave. And I'm like, Dumbledore, why are you not feeding this man? Why are you not providing any basic fucking comforts? Not just for Sirius, but for his very large pet that cannot live off of a dozen chicken bones every 4 months or however often Harry comes to visit.
Not a sleeping bag, not a fucking tent, not a goddamn thing.
Right. And before we leave the adverts, it's time for a PSA. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Lark.
Is the pandemic over?
Why is it just square? It's not over.
Oh, man. What should we do about that?
Oh, my God. Have you heard about a thing called wearing an N95 mask? They're so cool. All the cool kids are doing it. They protect you from COVID-19 and all of its variants.
Oh, man. When should I wear a mask?
Anytime you're in public with other people or indoors with them, which you should also be limiting. Limiting, which you should also probably not be.
Can't wait to put the outtakes on Patreon. My God. Never go inside with anyone ever. That's actually how I'm living my life. But
it's kind of how I'm living my life. That's what I'm like.
Wow. Thanks, Jesse. And remember, kids, it's cool to say no to spreading infectious disease and yes to creating a safe world for the most vulnerable. Welcome to Editorials, where we rant about stuff. It's definitely your turn because I just talked so much.
Okay, so first off, why is only Harry carrying a bag of food? If both Ron and Hermione had also put food in their bag, Sirius would at least had enough for like later that night, maybe tomorrow morning, enough for Buckbeak, who the fuck knows how much food Buckbeak needs to eat. And he can't just, unlike Sirius, he can't just let a random wanted hippogriff out to like forage for their own food. So, missed up on the kids' part.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. I didn't even think about that. My biggest editorial is about how much I hate Ron Weasley.
All right, let's talk about it. I don't have anything about Ron here besides my initial thing about him being so mean to Hermione.
He's so mean to Hermione. He doesn't say a single kind word to her in this entire chapter. Well, in this half of the chapter. He says 4 things to her, essentially. Hermione's obsessed with house elves. Come off it. I told you she's obsessed with house elves. Hermione, will you give it a rest? And, oh, give it a rest, Hermione. Oh, it sounds like a friend. That sounds like something a friend would say to their friend that they care about.
And then, like, trying to get Sirius to also be like, man, isn't Hermione being the worst about these house elves? And Sirius is like, oh, actually, this is something we should... That this is actually relevant information to our discussion. And it's like, that's right.
Yeah, there are 2 different times where Sirius either, like, shuts Ron up, by, like, he holds up a finger at one point and he, like, cuts him off at the other point. And in both cases in my book, I, like, drew a little, like, gold star for Sirius where I was like, excellently done, sir.
Yeah, he basically just doesn't quiet you at Ron for, like, yeah. Not bringing anything interesting to the table of this discussion.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have, like, 1 thing where I praise Sirius and then 1 bit of criticism for him. I'm trying to figure out which one I should say first. Okay. Sirius is so great here in this chapter because we're, according to my e-reader, 74% through this book. And he is the first fucking adult who is like, all right, I'm going to try to explain to you sort of what it was like the vibe of
what it felt like to be alive during Voldemort's first rise and why someone like Crouch was basically allowed to do crimes against humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really great that he's just like treating the gang like people. He's like, all right, I respect your ability to be able to like kind of get what I'm putting down here in order for us to continue to figure out this mystery. And I just like, thank God for Sirius for being able to be like, all right, you know what? I'm just fucking going to tell you because they're not getting it from Dumbledore. Like, Arthur Weasley, who has 7 kids, should be having this conversation with his kids, probably, honestly, especially when, I mean, I guess it hasn't happened yet where half of your kids are on, like, in the order or whatever, but you're, like, your youngest son is involved with Harry fucking Potter. You should be explaining this shit to Ron. Like, yep. You should be preparing him for the shit he's gonna have to go through. And it takes having it takes having someone like Sirius to be like, all right, let me give it to you straight. LOL. And it's just a good look for Sirius. I'm just so glad that like Harry and Ron and Hermione have someone like this to go to.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Talking to kids about serious matters in an honest but age-appropriate way is like one of the most important things that you can do as a, I don't want to say parental figure, as a person in a child's life who is like teaching and helping them grow and become good adults who know how to move through the world.
Or even I would just say as a like citizen of the world, it's like, you know, like younger people are going to be more in this shit than we are. Like, and if one of the upsides is to being like, oh yeah, well I lived in like, you know, like Sirius living through this shit, it's important for him to be giving the trio this knowledge that he lived through in order for them to be able to better assess and be better prepared for when this, all this shit just happens again. Because like in real life, whenever you think a political movement or a, you know, a fascist has been brought down or a war has been won, quote unquote, it's like, that's never the end. You know, all that
right,
shit.
That's the beginning.
It's the beginning. And all that shit is sort of like when everyone's like, wow, Reagan really screwed millennials and Gen Z's over. I wasn't even alive then. It's like, yes, because history matters and it's still happening.
Yeah.
Yep. And right. And this is basically the like Reagan ruined everything for the Harry Potter world, which is a, like, it really just goes back to, I mean, really it goes back to like blood purity racism and like Hogwarts sort of complacency in maintaining those sort of social and class hierarchies that is never right. taken apart, but it just keeps coming back to bite everyone in the ass. Funny yep. how that works.
Yep. Because when you're like, oh yay, Voldemort's dead, we don't need to worry about anything anymore, you're like, oh, I think you missed the point of the assignment, actually.
Yeah, it's not that there's any structural things involved that both created Voldemort and allowed his brand of domestic terrorism to flourish and almost ruin your entire society.
I know, Gigi, right? They were so incorrect about not looking at any of the structural issues.
Oh my God, she's just, I don't know what she's yelling about. She just loves to yell.
Same, honestly.
I can't blame her. Everything is, no. I mean, yeah. So good on Sirius. Make him a fucking teacher at this goddamn school. Throw bins, exercise bins. I don't know what you need to burn, what chants you need to do to get rid of bins, and then just make Sirius the like hot young history teacher.
Yeah, he would be a great political science teacher.
Yeah, fucking do it.
I truly think that you could just give Bins a different classroom, tell him these are the hours of your classes, and then never send a student in there, and he would not notice, and would just teach his lessons to an empty room, would still think he had a job, and you could just get a real history teacher.
Oh my God, what if that was a new detention, is that you just sent kids to sit in on Ben's lessons?
That would be so effective.
And then you're like, oh, fucking goblin wars. And then no one is doing gross things with their hands. Yep. No one's doing manual labor, and maybe you get to learn about the goblin wars potentially, or not, who knows. Yeah. Everyone wins.
I think that's a great idea, actually. We already talked a little bit about Sirius's "if you want to know what a man's like" quote, so I think I'm just going to finish out by being like, we get this foreshadowing about Percy's upcoming betrayal, which, like, it feels meaningful that Ron, you know, I know Percy's not that much older than him and Ron has known him his whole life, but, like, I think people have a tendency to, like, over-trust and overvalue someone purely on the basis of them being family. And I think that, like, Arthur and Molly at this point would definitely be like, Percy would never. But I think that, like, Ron and the twins are like, Percy would totally. Like, they...
Yeah.
Get him.
Yeah. It's just, like, it really is just sort of frustrating because I feel like a lot of times we see Ron being effortlessly perceptive. But then mm-hmm. he just gets caught up in, like, sort of the, like, he gets caught up in sort of his own insecurity and sort of his own, he gets caught up in feelings that he just doesn't know how to deal with very well. And it's sort of, it, like, his perceptiveness is sometimes just overshadowed by just this sheer assholishness of him, like, vomiting his feelings, like, at Hermione, or Hermione, honestly. But yeah, no, I think you're completely right. Where in which, yeah, Ron has an excellent grasp of, like, Percy's sort of near endless ambition and, like, where that would take him better than I think Molly and Arthur do, for sure.
Yeah. Because as we've been saying since book one, Percy is a Slytherin.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. I just mean that ambition is, like, one of Percy's driving forces as a person. You know,
honestly, I think that I feel like being in Slytherin would have worked for him. Like, he seems to have a strong enough personality to be like, I'm actually not down for this racism bullshit. Fuck y'all. But then he could have made the political connections that he would need to get a better job than this that he has mm-hmm. when he's just like filling in for a fake crouch for a crouch that's like. Right. Dead already? I don't remember. He's dead already.
No,
right?
He's not dead yet.
Okay. We get that happens later. Yeah. To a crouch that's like not there.
Essentially. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So
it honestly might have been better for him too, because if he had that, you know, was in the house where he's gonna make those political affiliations, he's gonna like get his foot in the door, I think he would have been better equipped to focus more on his like his family's place in that hierarchy, and I think could have gotten better morals than he does as a Gryffindor, where like he's not gaining access, where he's feeling his ambitions impeded by his social standing.
Yeah.
I think that if he had like had that Slytherin in, I think that he would have been able to use that to like do a lot of good politically, because he could have like focused his sort of like extracurricular efforts on like building a solid like moral ground about how he wants like the world to look and how he wants his dad's job to be perceived and stuff like that.
Yeah. And like he even what he could have done is he could have learned to craft his own family and personal history in a way to like also like gain political clout, because mm-hmm. if there is one thing that old money conservatives love, it is a token. So and I think that Percy definitely could have been the person to play the like, yes, my family is a bunch of like impoverished blood traders, but look at all the things that I, you know, look at what I can do. Look at how I can help you. Look at the strengths that I bring to the table, kind of thing. And like, he could have been on his way to being fucking Minister of Magic, like in like 5 years, if he could have been a Slytherin, as opposed to being a Gryffindor and like, being sort of hobbled by the Gryffindorness of Vil.
Yeah, which then makes him overcompensate for what he feels is like his family's holding him back by doing things like siding with the Death Eaters. So I mean, not knowingly, but knowingly yeah. enough. So,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. Fun.
This is actually an excellent, maybe not an excellent segue into my one serious critique of this chapter, which is essentially that you can take the rich pure blood, you can take the boy out of the rich pure blood cesspool, but you can't take the cesspool out of the boar. Because when he's like, you're inferior, so I'm kind of just like, I feel like that is sort of Sirius's old money background coming to the fore. And I think we see, and I think a little bit of that, along with just like a lot of PTSD and family trauma, is what we'll see in the next book when we see his treatment and relationship with Creature. But I mean, I don't think that Sirius is intentionally being mean when he's referring to Winky the House Elf as Crouch Senior's inferior. But I think that's just like a little bit of unexamined bias coming out of a young, stunted Sirius Black. So language matters. Anyway, okay.
Language does matter.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing, the sort of sticking point with, you know, Sirius and Creature is sort of like maybe the biggest sort of, like the cringiest bit about, I mean, Sirius's character that we see here, who like in general is just an overall like awesome dude who just has a shit ton of, what is that line from Our Flag Means Death? They're just sweethearts just dealing with a lot of trauma.
A fair amount of trauma.
Yeah, that is Sirius, whatever pretentious middle name, Black, like right here.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. Thanks everyone for joining us for this very heavy episode. And see you in 2 weeks. Until then.
Style. Flask. Homeland Security.